Thank you to everyone for coming, and thank you to the organizers for the opportunity. It's really a weekend in which we can absorb our hearts and minds in the teachings, in the life example of Srila Prabhupada. I feel very humbled looking at the lineup of devotees, all very, very senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada who had so many direct experiences. And obviously myself still learning from them, learning from all of you. But I hope together we can discuss something about Srila Prabhupada, and I'll try to leave significant time in this session for everyone on this call to perhaps also share their thoughts and reflections on Srila Prabhupada and the things about Srila Prabhupada that really touch you. And I think that will be very, very nice to have an exchange. So I will leave time for that. And I hope all of you will participate. And if you have any questions, we can also discuss that. So before I begin, I'll just offer some prayers. And then we'll kind of dive into the life and pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. Om Gyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Maybe many of us on the call feel like we missed out. Many of us never got to see Srila Prabhupada directly in that way. And many of us often feel how amazing it would be to be with Srila Prabhupada, to see Srila Prabhupada live in action. One devotee once said to me, and I could very much relate to it, he said, I don't often think about what it would be like with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. That seems to me to be very far away. But I do often think, what would it be like to be with Srila Prabhupada, to see Srila Prabhupada functioning, spreading Krishna consciousness, inspiring people's hearts, and sharing the mood and mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although we never met Srila Prabhupada, many of us in that way, the one beautiful thing that we do have is we have Srila Prabhupada's books, we have Srila Prabhupada's so much footage and lectures. And one amazing thing we have is the association of his disciples. And it's pretty amazing because his disciples who saw him, who learned so many things from him, who were personally molded, guided, and instructed by him, now they've grown in their spiritual life and become extremely evolved in their understanding of Krishna consciousness. And with their mature Krishna consciousness, through them, we can actually see Srila Prabhupada in a different light. And therefore, we're really, really fortunate this weekend to have an opportunity to hear from the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And perhaps something that all of us should be very, very attentive to and aware of is the fact that this association that we have with Srila Prabhupada's disciples is a very, very unique opportunity. And while that opportunity is there to hear from them directly and to learn from them, we should take 100% advantage, because they are a very clear link to Srila Prabhupada for each one of us, especially for those of us who didn't see Srila Prabhupada in that way. Srila Prabhupada was not just a guru. Srila Prabhupada was an acharya. A guru is someone who makes disciples. But an acharya is someone who's so powerful that they make disciples who themselves become gurus. So while a guru makes disciples, an acharya makes gurus. A guru is someone who teaches their disciples, their direct disciples, and gives them lessons. But an acharya is someone who teaches for generation after generation, because what they present to the world is not just something that the immediate people who come in contact with that personality benefit from, but generations benefit from the teachings of an acharya. A guru is someone who protects their disciples, but an acharya is someone who protects an entire sampradaya. They protect the sanctity of the sampradaya, and they protect the sampradaya by ensuring that the sampradaya increases and expands and continues on in a very vibrant and powerful way into the future. So every acharya is a guru, but not every guru is an acharya. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada is very, very special. Yes, he's a guru, but more than that, he's an acharya. And more than that, for each one of us, he's the founder acharya. And everything we do in spiritual life is guided by Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada remains the reference point which guides the way we live our life, the decisions we make, and the way in which we try to spread Krishna consciousness. So today what I wanted to share with you is something that has fascinated me about Srila Prabhupada. And this talk perhaps could be endless, because the topic that I'm going to open up, as you'll see, I'm sure each one of you on the call have your own realizations of this topic. But today maybe I will give some seeds of thought, and then I'll be opening it up to hear from all of you. And I'll really be looking forward to hearing all of your realizations on this. But what I want to talk about today is Srila Prabhupada's character. And I've titled it Srila Prabhupada, All Angles of Vision. Because when I think about Srila Prabhupada, I think about someone who had so many different aspects to his personality. And when I look at myself, often when we look at individuals in the world, they tend to have one or two or different aspects of it. But what's so fascinating about Srila Prabhupada is that, of course, he's a pure devotee of Krishna. And because he is a pure devotee of Krishna, he seems to be empowered with all of these different qualities and characteristics, which sometimes you think, how could these be embodied in the same person? Sometimes they seem to be opposite things, and Srila Prabhupada perfectly brings them together. And as I begin speaking and sharing some of my thoughts on this, I'm sure many, many thoughts will also come to your mind. So please do keep sharing your thoughts, and please do put any questions you may have on the chat. And and let us dive in and reflect a little bit on how Srila Prabhupada's character from all angles of vision is something incredible. The first thing I want to share with you about Srila Prabhupada is perhaps the foundation of Srila Prabhupada's own life. This is Srila Prabhupada, maybe 1961, 1962, something around that time. Srila Prabhupada in Radha Damodara Temple, Vrindavan. You can tell us on the chat if you've been to Radha Damodara Temple. And when you went to Radha Damodara Temple and went to the rooms of Srila Prabhupada, how did it make you feel? What was that experience like? I remember the first time I went to Srila Prabhupada's rooms at Radha Damodara Temple, I took a Bhagavatam with me and I sat there all day practically and just read in Srila Prabhupada's rooms at Radha Damodara. Srila Prabhupada, in 1954, Srila Prabhupada took Vanaprast. In 1956, Srila Prabhupada relocated to Vrindavan. And in 1959, Srila Prabhupada took sannyas. And straight after taking sannyas, Srila Prabhupada relocated to Radha Damodara Temple, Vrindavan, the place where Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi are located, the place where so many acharyas, samadhis, and remembrance places are located. And here Srila Prabhupada lived a very, very deep spiritual life. It's explained, if you read the book Srila Prabhupada at Radha Damodara, there's a book like that. And in that book, it explains Srila Prabhupada's daily schedule while he was at Radha Damodara Temple. Srila Prabhupada in the early mornings would rise very, very early. He would be doing his writing work. He would be chanting. He would come out for the greeting of the deities. And at 10 o'clock every day, and Prabhupada's schedule at Radha Damodara was practically the same every day. So in the mornings, he'd be writing and chanting. Then at 10 o'clock, Srila Prabhupada would come out and he'd go around all the main temples in Vrindavan and take darshan of all the different Goswamis, temples and deities. And then Srila Prabhupada would collect some vegetables from the market. And then Srila Prabhupada, about 11 o'clock, would come back to Radha Damodara Temple. And here you see in Srila Prabhupada's kitchen on a simple three-tiered cooker, Srila Prabhupada would make his lunch. Prabhupada was a super quick cook. He would just do it really, really quickly in this three-tiered cooker. And Prabhupada would sit down and take prasadam. And looking outside of the window, he would look into the courtyard of the Radha Damodara Temple, meditating on the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And remembering Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa, that Rupa Goswami was the one who established in this world the mission to fulfill the desire of Mahaprabhu. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, as a Rupanuga, a follower of Rupa Goswami, was also meditating on that. Sometimes I look at this picture, it's a very, very mystical picture. You sometimes think, what was Srila Prabhupada thinking? How he was masterminding a revolution from this tiny, almost unknown place in a holy village in India, so remote from the rest of civilization. But here Srila Prabhupada was preparing a revolution. Srila Prabhupada was so incredibly deep. He was so incredibly rooted in his own spiritual life. He was not just living in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan consciousness. And that entire spiritual consciousness was pervading his entire being. Later on, after Srila Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness, one disciple was once serving Prabhupada, and he saw Prabhupada flicking through a nectar of devotion, and Prabhupada came to a picture of the Radha Damodara Temple, and he saw Prabhupada's face lit up, And Prabhupada said, Radha Damodar Temple, I remember my time there. And Prabhupada said, it was too much ecstatic. Prabhupada said, my time in Radha Damodar Temple was too much ecstatic. So here was Srila Prabhupada at the end of his life, seemingly at the end of his life, in Vrindavan, and just there, chanting, reading, praying, meditating, having darshan of the deities, so happy, so rooted in his Krishna consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada wasn't satisfied there. As Prahlad Maharaj says in the Bhagavatam, Prayena Deva Manayo Swami Mukti Kama. Some people are very concerned, Swamukti, about their own liberation. They're very good spiritualists, they're yogis, they're advanced transcendentalists, but Swamukti Kama, they're mainly interested in their own liberation. Netan vihaya kripanan vimumuksha eko. Prahlad Maharaj says, I don't want to be vimumuksha. I don't want to be liberated alone. Maya sukhaya badamudvahato vimudhan. I'm concerned about all the living entities who are carrying the heavy burden of Maya. And therefore, I will go to the cities, the towns, and to the places where everyone's populating, and I will go there and help them. And so here you see an incredible kind of contrast in Prabhupada's life. He was just so deeply rooted in his own spiritual life, but simultaneously he was reaching out and ready to go anywhere, ready to speak to any person, ready to embrace any challenge, any uncertainty, to share Krishna consciousness. Now let us just think for a moment, what does it mean that someone is able to have such almost seemingly opposite aspects to their personality, to be such an internally deep person, and at the same time, incredibly externally active, reaching out to the people. Here is Srila Prabhupada. I think this is Tompkins Square Park. I'm not sure if it's Tompkins Square or it's Washington Square car park, but it's New York, 1966. Srila Prabhupada, or it could be actually San Francisco. But here is Srila Prabhupada chanting and just connecting with all of these individuals. Such a different world to Vrindavan, such a different world to what he was used to in India, growing up in Krishna consciousness. But still, as he closed his eyes and chanted the Maha Mantra, he was right there with Krishna in Vrindavan, even though in New York or San Francisco, wherever. One time, Achyutananda Prabhu, in New York, there was a paper called the East Village Voice. It was the paper of the hippies, the newspaper of the hippies. So they had reported on Srila Prabhupada, and Achyutananda Prabhu brought the news article to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, read it out. What are they writing? And the news article wrote in its own kind of like hippie language, alternative language, explaining Srila Prabhupada. It said, while all the chaos is going on in New York's Lower East Side, one old man, 1 year past his allotted 70, walked into New York's East Village and set about to prove to the world that he knew how God could be found. Turn off, sing out, and fall in. And then the report went on and said, the old Swami has come with a method of transcendental realization that's sweeter than acid, cheaper than pot, and non-bustable by fuzz. How is it all possible? Through Krishna, the Swami says. So Prabhupada was listening to this, you know, sweeter than acid, cheaper than pot. So Prabhupada listened to the whole article and then he began smiling and he said, He has written nicely. He has written in his own words what is going on. So Srila Prabhupada, he was just a totally different world Srila Prabhupada had come to, but he was able to have both of these things in his personality. If you ever come across a person who's so incredibly deep in their own spirituality and simultaneously is ready and willing to do practically anything to reach out to others, then you can understand this is an incredible person. Even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read about Sanatan Goswami, who is glorifying Haridas Thakur. And he says to Haridas Thakur, Achar prachar karaha karaha dui karya, tumi sarva guru tumi jagater arya. Sanatan Goswami says, some people are very good at achar, their own spiritual cultivation, but they don't do prachar, they don't go out, they don't reach out. And then Sanatan Goswami says, many, many people are also there who reach out, they do prachar, but in their own spiritual depth, achar, they are lacking. So Sanatan Goswami looks at Haridas Thakur and he says, achar prachar kara, because you do both the internal work and you're ready to do externally, reach out to anyone, karahadui kariya, you do these two things, tumi sarva guru tumi, you are the spiritual master, jagatera arya, of the whole world. So that was Srila Prabhupada. He was truly the jagatera arya, you know, the jagat guru, the spiritual master of the world. Because when he spoke, when he was reaching out from a place of having deep internal connection with Krishna. And people, when they heard Prabhupada chant, he chanted in simple melodies, but it penetrated their heart. When he spoke profound, simple, pure truths, but it penetrated people's hearts. When he looked at individuals, even without saying anything, he penetrated people's hearts, because that is someone who has purity. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the best Gosti Anandis are those who reach out, and Bhajan Anandis are those who go deep in their own bhajan. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the best Gosti Anandi is the Bhajan Anandi who preaches. In other words, Srila Prabhupada was simultaneously a Bhajan Anandi and a Gosti Anandi, because his internal life was so deep and simultaneously he was just reaching out. Who can accommodate such things in their personality? Srila Prabhupada could. Let me share with you another example. Srila Prabhupada was someone who was thinking big. In other words, Prabhupada himself once said, my disease is that I never think small. Srila Prabhupada was thinking big, even when that Mr. Rubin met him in the early days in New York. And Mr. Rubin, in his account, he says he met Prabhupada on New York bench. And he said, you know, I was just wondering, what is this old man doing here? He looked like an old holy man. And you know, he was on some kind of mission. But I was just thinking, where's it all going? What's he actually going to be able to achieve? And Prabhupada looked at that Mr. Rubin and made the prophetic statement. There are books. There are temples. There are devotees. There is a worldwide movement, but only time is separating us. Srila Prabhupada knew that this was the wish of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore it would happen. And therefore he never limited his thinking. This is Srila Prabhupada right here in the early days in Mayapur, Sridham Mayapur. On one morning walk, His Grace Bhagavat Prabhu talks about how Srila Prabhupada looked at the devotees and Prabhupada said, I want you to buy all the land in Mayapur So even that already was like, wow, how are we going to buy all the land in Mayapur? We don't have that kind of money. Prabhupada said, I want you to buy all the land in Mayapur. But it didn't stop there. He said, then what I want you to do is apply to the Indian government for independence and create the country of Mayapur. No one was thinking along those lines. And then Prabhupada said, and then in our country of Mayapur, we will have our own currency. One Chaitanya, five Chaitanyas, 10 Chaitanyas. He said, we will have our own import and export business. And he said, all temple presidents across the whole world will become ambassadors of the country of Mayapur. And it blew the devotees' minds, because here they were just walking through a paddy field. They were just walking through a paddy field. And Prabhupada had this whole vision. Prabhupada was thinking big. And what eventually happened, all of us know, so many individuals came forward. And here we go. This is Mayapur. And we're close to this vision being realized. And who knows where it will stop and what more will happen and how it will expand more and more and more. And where did it all start? If you see me circle this right here, this little hut here that I've just circled in the bottom left corner is the Bhajan Kutir of Srila Prabhupada. When they got the Mayapur land, this was the first structure which was built. And Prabhupada was very, very happily staying there. He said, I am happy to stay in this hut. But if I stay in this hut, nobody will come. Therefore, we must create a grand city. And even when the city was becoming formed, Srila Prabhupada said, I want you to keep this hut. I want you to keep this humble straw hut and do 24-hour kirtan in here. I want people to come and see this is where it all began. And now see where it has all gone. That was Srila Prabhupada. Someone who was just thinking so big. One time the devotees were with Prabhupada in London and they were driving past Buckingham Palace, and the devotee had some really amazing news to share with Srila Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, one of the Queen's guards, you know, the guards that stand in front of Buckingham Palace, one of the Queen's guards has become a devotee. So everyone was like super impressed by that. Like, wow, one of the Queen's guards has become a devotee. Prabhupada looked back at the devotee and he said, oh, what about the Queen? No one was thinking like, what about the Queen? I mean, that's out of the question. For Prabhupada, nothing was out of the question. Impossible was the word in a fool's dictionary. Just now we've been celebrating Gaur Purnima and we were remembering how Srila Prabhupada and the devotees published Chaitanya Charitamrita. The BBT were usually printing one book every 2 months. Srila Prabhupada began putting the pressure on and he said, you have to go faster. They said, okay, Prabhupada, if we pull out all the stops, we can go twice as fast. We can do 2 books in 2 months. Prabhupada looked at the devotees on the morning walk, Rameshwar Prabhu and the others. Prabhupada said, I want all the volumes printed in 2 months. They said, Prabhupada, we're doing one volume every 2 months. Prabhupada said, I want all the volumes in 2 months. Prabhupada, it's impossible. Then the prophetic statement came. Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And no one wants to be a fool. So the devotees surrendered to it. And by Srila Prabhupada's vision, by Srila Prabhupada's empowerment, and by their complete chastity to Srila Prabhupada's desire and empowerment, they were able to do it. And that's the amazing thing. The devotees were just doing amazing things under Srila Prabhupada's empowerment. In 1976, the devotees in America ordered 1 million copies of Bhagavad Gita to be printed. This is mentioned in Yogeshwar Prabhu's book. Did you know that in 1976, this was a world record? It was the single biggest printing of a book in the world. No one had ever done that before. 1 million copies of a book, no one had ordered. Prabhupada and his band of disciples ordered 1 million Bhagavad Gitas to be printed. It said that it took 27 carriages of trains to get the paper to the printing factory, and the carriages which were containing all the paper for those books, they stretched for 3 miles. This is in 1970. How did Prabhupada do? He thought big. He had the purity. He gave the empowerment, and the disciples just received it and they took it. Prabhupada was thinking big like anything. But at the same time, Prabhupada had such incredible attention to detail. You see, like some people, they can do like big, big things, but then the details go out the window. Or some people, they're like very detail orientated, but then they can't really think beyond that. Prabhupada was able to do both. Prabhupada had such attention to detail. Here in the picture is Krishna Balaram Temple of Vrindavan. Prabhupada had created these huge projects, but Prabhupada was attentive to the details. The devotees tell the story of Srila Prabhupada and the bell in Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada had arranged for a bell to be there in the front of the Krishna Balaram Temple, and he said, I want the bell in the Krishna Balaram Temple. It should ring once on the half hour, and on the hour, it should ring the number of times according to the time of day. Every half hour and on the hour, the bell must ring. So the devotees thought that's a pretty simple thing. They got a chokidar, a night watchman. You know, in India, you can just employ someone like that, and they put him in charge of ringing the bell. But somehow or other, night watchmen in India, when it comes to nighttime, they end up sleeping and falling asleep, so the bell wasn't going off. Prabhupada, the world acharya, who was traveling everywhere and anywhere with huge projects, was calling the devotees to his room and saying, why is the bell not ringing? Prabhupada called in Akshayananda Maharaj, Gunarnava Prabhu. They tell these stories. And Prabhupada said, I am judging the entire management of the Krishna Balaram Temple on whether this bell is rung or not. And so Prabhupada is just such attention to detail. So Akshayananda Maharaj, Gunarnava Prabhu, they were like overburdened with so much management. But they had to somehow or other make sure that this bell was being rung every half an hour and every hour. And the most difficult time was the night time, because that's when the chokidar would go to sleep. And the most difficult thing on top of that was that during the night time, there was generally one person who was always awake. And you know who that was, right? Srila Prabhupada. And so one time at 12, I think Harikesh Maharaj at that time, he tells this story. At midnight, Prabhupada rang the bell and called Harikesh Prabhu. And Prabhupada just looked at him. He was trying to clear the sleep out of his eyes. And he came to Prabhupada said, did you hear that? Harikesh Maharaj said, Prabhupada said, did you not hear that? He said, no, Srila Prabhupada, I didn't hear it. Prabhupada said, that's the problem. The bell's not ringing. Why is the bell not ringing? No one's hearing. I'm hearing, but no one's hearing. So Harikesh Maharaj had to go out, make sure the bell was rung. And then sure enough, at 12:30 on the half an hour, when the bell had to ring again, it wasn't rung. And Prabhupada called him and he said, "It's happened again. The bell is not ringing." So it's so incredible to see how Srila Prabhupada, along with doing huge things for Krishna, was very, very attentive to the detail. Because he was not just doing service, he was doing devotional service. He was doing it with such heart, and he wanted everything to be perfect for Krishna. It was not just a mechanical thing that Srila Prabhupada was just churning out all these things. Everything was done with precise consciousness. Like the devotees, every morning they would be very, very excited because they would go into Prabhupada's room and they would collect the tapes. And the tapes would have the amount of translation work that Prabhupada had done that night. So they'd be very excited to take the tape and think, now there's this much more nectar which the world will have of Srila Prabhupada's words of wisdom. So one time, the devotees saw that the light was on in Srila Prabhupada's room all night. So in the morning, they went into the room and they thought, this is an amazing night. Prabhupada was just translating all night. And they looked at the counter on the dictating machine and he had only moved forward a few notches. So they looked at Prabhupada and they said, "Prabhupada, you were awake all night. But it's only gone forward a few notches. You've only translated one or two verses." Prabhupada looked at the devotees and said, "Every single word which I am translating, I have to think deeply how I will present this knowledge so people will understand it." Prabhupada said, "It is not a mechanical thing. This is detailed, deeply profound contemplation which is required in order to deliver this philosophy to the world." And then the devotees realized Prabhupada was so attentive to detail. So who can accommodate such things? Can we think big and simultaneously be attentive to the detail? Prabhupada was such an amazing personality. Here's something else I'd like to share with you. Srila Prabhupada was such a scholar. He was not just someone who studied the scriptures at a certain point in his life. He was living with the scriptures throughout his life. Srila Prabhupada was able to extract the essence of Shastra. When the six Goswamis are glorified by Srinivas Acharya in his Ashtakam, then Srinivas Acharya says, "Nana Shastra Vicharane Kanipuno Sadharma Sanstapako." He glorifies the six Goswamis and he says, "Nana Shastra, they took the many, many scriptures, Sadharma Sanstapako, and they extracted the essence and they established that essence for generations to come." If we wanted to read all of the scriptures, the first problem is that we wouldn't have enough time. Even if somehow or other we had enough time to read all of the scriptures, the second problem is we wouldn't have the patience to try to understand them. Most of us, if we read within an hour or even less, our mind is going everywhere. We don't have the time to read all the scriptures, neither we have the patience to read all the scriptures. And even if somehow we had the time and the patience, we would not have the intelligence and purity to be able to extract the essence, the Sadharma, the eternal principle. We would not be able to do that. Therefore, Prabhupada did it for us. Prabhupada said, "The best of me is in my books." And of all his contributions, repeatedly, Srila Prabhupada said, the most important is the books that I've given you. And so Srila Prabhupada was just such a scholar. But he didn't just get it right. He got the message across. Some people are very scholarly. They can get the message right. But very few know how to get the message right and how to simultaneously get the message across. Imagine that Srila Prabhupada had such a deep understanding of the Shastra that he was able to present such lofty concepts to individuals who had no background. And he brought them up by his teachings so that many of them also became scholars. That is a good teacher is one who can make others a good teacher. And Srila Prabhupada did that because he had such a grasp of the philosophy. So here was Srila Prabhupada, the scholar, the person who had really understood all the scriptures, whose mind was bathing in the words of Shastra. Shabde pare cha nishnatam brahma nyupa shamashrayam. Bhagavatam says that guru is that person whose mind is bathing in the words of the Shastra. That was Srila Prabhupada. The Bhagavatam was just, he was the living Bhagavatam. And all of those words were just in his consciousness all the time. Everything he saw through the eyes of Bhagavatam. So Srila Prabhupada was incredibly scholarly. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was also incredibly streetwise. I love this picture of Prabhupada. Many of you have seen it. This is Prabhupada just queuing up there in an airport with so-called just people of the world. And here was Srila Prabhupada, who was so deep and philosophical and bathing in Shastra. But when it came to interacting with the world, he was so practical. He was so progressive. He was so pragmatic. And he was just so streetwise. Prabhupada knew how to deal in the world. He was like not just a scholar, he was a businessman. Prabhupada once said to a devotee, in two things in life, you should never be shy. Prasadam and business. So Prabhupada was never shy when it came to dealing with people for the purpose of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. In Detroit, the devotees had this idea to buy the Fisher Mansion, which was like an opulent mansion in Detroit. So Prabhupada went with the devotees to have a viewing, and then the estate agent took them around, and Prabhupada was appreciating all the chandeliers and the decor and the opulence of the whole place. And finally, then it came to, making a deal. So Prabhupada was just looking at the agent, and the agent was looking at Prabhupada, and he was waiting. Okay, so I've spent all this time taking you guys around. Are you guys going to make an offer? So Prabhupada just looked at the agent and said, we are beggars. I mean, it's not the first line you'd think of telling an agent, an estate agent, if you're thinking of buying a property. Prabhupada did. Prabhupada said, we are beggars. So we think you should just give us this property for free. So the estate agent, he was like incredulous. He wasn't sure whether it was a joke or whether it was true. And he said, well, that's out of the question. I need to get at least $350,000 for this property. So Prabhupada was just obviously warming up the atmosphere. So he said, the agent said, $350,000. So Srila Prabhupada looked at him and said, $300,000 cash, no more. So, when you offer cash, it's like, wow, you let the person feel the money, It's like, yeah. So somehow or other, Prabhupada just brought him down. Prabhupada also did not have that kind of money in his bank, but Prabhupada put the offer down. He knew it was okay. The money will manifest. Krishna will help. And Srila Prabhupada just put the offer down, $300,000, and bought the Fisher Mansion. You can go to it today. We still have that place in Detroit. And the next day, the devotees came to the Fisher Mansion to kind of take over the property. And as they were coming to the property, the owner of the property, the agent and the owner, they were like trying to strip the property of all the, you know, all the expensive items. So the devotee said, no, no, how can you? You sold the property as it is, all the expensive items, the, you know, to the extent of even they were taking the door handles. Said, no, no, you got to keep all of this in. And then the agent and the owner looked at the devotees and they said, we don't know what your guru has done. I don't know how we sold this to you for so cheap. He's confused us. He's embezzled us. He's done some mystic thing over us. I don't know how he's managed to buy this building from us for so cheap. Later on, the devotees reported it to Prabhupada that this is what the agent said, that, you know, the Swami's confused me. He's tricked me. And Prabhupada began laughing and he said, that is a fact. That is a fact. Prabhupada said, no one can defeat me. I am a Calcutta boy. So Prabhupada was so streetwise. So who can do it? Who can be such a scholar, such a person who understands the subtleties and nuances of philosophy and Sanskrit and commentaries, and who is so much absorbed in that world of theology, and at the same time, someone who's able to just deal with the world, deal with people, get things done, and just be incredibly competent and practical on a day-to-day level. That was Srila Prabhupada. I hope you're kind of seeing what I'm trying to share with you today, which is how Srila Prabhupada had all these aspects to his personality. And the reason I'm trying to share this with you is because anything we want to learn in life, actually, my firm conviction is practically anything you want to learn in life, you can probably learn it from Srila Prabhupada's life. Because Srila Prabhupada just had all of these aspects to his character, which were just incredible, just amazing. Prabhupada once said to Vidyananda Maharaj had taken sannyas, just a new sannyasi. So he looked at Srila Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, now I've taken sannyas. I can give up all my managerial responsibility and I'm now just free to preach. And Prabhupada looked back at Vidyananda Maharaj and he said, and Vidyananda Maharaj could tell Prabhupada was not connecting with that statement. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, you should be like me. In the morning, I give the Bhagavatam class. And in the afternoon, I go to the bank. And that was Srila Prabhupada. The Bhagavatam class and the bank. Srila Prabhupada was scholarly, but at the same time, incredibly streetwise as well. Let me share another one with you. Srila Prabhupada was a preserver of tradition. Srila Prabhupada had grown up in such refined Vaishnav tradition. His father was such a Vaishnav. Prabhupada said, my father, Gaur Mohan Dey, he only wanted me to become a devotee of Radharani. He had no other aspiration for me. So Srila Prabhupada was he grew up in such Vaishnava tradition. And what he expertly did was he came to the Western world and he shared that tradition. He taught that tradition. He inspired that tradition. And he set up systems so that the tradition of Vaishnavism would be preserved for many, many generations to come. Here's an example. I mean, Srila Prabhupada taught the devotees how to cook. If you read in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrit, then it's explained how Srila Prabhupada began the love feast on a Sunday. And one day in 22nd Avenue, on the night before the first love feast ever, Srila Prabhupada was awake at 10 o'clock at night, and Kirtanananda and Brahmananda Prabhus were there with Srila Prabhupada. And at 10 o'clock at night, Srila Prabhupada was teaching them how to cook. He was teaching them how to make many preparations simultaneously. He was teaching them what spices to use with other spices. He was teaching them how you stir something so that it doesn't burn and at the same time you don't crush it. He was teaching the devotees how to make a chaunce. Srila Prabhupada, and then Kirtanananda or Brahmananda, one of them, they asked, like, Prabhupada, how did you learn to cook so expertly and so quickly? And Prabhupada said, I watched my mother. I learned from my mother. I learned cooking from my mother. And like this, Srila Prabhupada just taught them how to cook. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, in so many other ways, he just gave a culture. He didn't just give a teaching, he gave a culture. Srila Prabhupada got on his knees and he showed the devotees how to clean a floor in a Vedic way. Srila Prabhupada taught so many aspects of culture. Can you imagine? Srila Prabhupada brought deity worship with all the upacharas, all the different rituals. Of course, somewhat simplified, but he brought many, many aspects of Archanam and introduced that into the Western world. And in our temples today, that goes on. Such a preserver of tradition. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was such an innovator. He was such an innovator. He was ready to do what others would not do. He was ready to adjust what others would not adjust. He was ready to embrace anukulyena, whatever is favorable for the practice and sharing of Krishna consciousness. And here there's a poster of the mantra rock dance. Like very, very early on in San Francisco, the devotees organized Srila Prabhupada to come to this mega concert with Allen Ginsberg and all these other groups. And perhaps in the coming days, we'll even hear direct eyewitness accounts of this event. But Srila Prabhupada just came there. He came there to the mantra rock dance, which was... Which Swami would go to the mantra rock dance? Which Swami was ready to walk into such a place and talk about Krishna? Srila Prabhupada was just ready because he knew everyone was looking for Krishna and he knew Krishna could be connected everywhere. And therefore, in his ingenious innovation, Srila Prabhupada was just bringing Krishna everywhere. Srila Prabhupada engaged vehicles, he engaged machinery, he engaged, he adjusted. You see, Srila Prabhupada knew the tradition so deeply that he was able to understand what was the principle and what was a detail. And he was always careful to preserve the principle, but ready and willing to adjust the details whenever it was required in order to proliferate Krishna consciousness in a wider way. Srila Prabhupada had incredible fidelity to the tradition, but he was also willing to introduce flexibility to make Krishna consciousness relevant, to make it dynamic, and to make it something that was achievable for people. And so which acharya could do this? Srila Prabhupada was, many acharyas actually did this, but the level to which Srila Prabhupada did it was truly astounding. To preserve, but to innovate. Again, some people are if we call them preservationists. And some people are innovators. But when we're able to bring those things together, then we find someone who, along with obviously being empowered by Krishna, was therefore able to spread this message all over the world. Again, we see such, I wouldn't say opposites, but such different aspects of the spectrum meeting in the character of Srila Prabhupada. Here's another one. Srila Prabhupada was incredibly resilient, right? This picture here is the the cornerstone laying of the Radha Ras Bihari temple in Juhu. Many of you may have been to Juhu. Srila Prabhupada, when he identified this place to build a temple, it was practically like a deserted, rat and snake infested swamp. It was not even populated really by anyone else. It was outside of the main areas of Mumbai. No one was coming there. The conditions were difficult. The owners of the land were giving so much problem to the devotees. The government were giving problems. Dacoits were coming. But somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada was resilient. And he said, I'm not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. Even the devotees themselves were thinking that all of these external challenges, they must be a sign from Krishna. They must be a sign from Krishna that we're meant to be somewhere else. Because even they were thinking, I don't know why we're here. There's no point having a temple here. And now all these problems are coming. It's clearly a sign from Krishna to leave. Srila Prabhupada said, no. We are building a temple here for Radha Ras Bihari. Srila Prabhupada said, I have brought Radha Ras Bihari here and I made a promise to them that I will build a temple for them. And therefore, there's no question of leaving. Such resilience. When everyone else was doubting, Srila Prabhupada was resilient and determined. And of course, His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj writes a wonderful book on this, on Mumbai. Mumbai became known as Srila Prabhupada's office. Prabhupada said, Vrindavan is my home, Mayapur is my place of worship, and Mumbai is my office. And so Prabhupada built this temple. And if I'm not mistaken, to this very day, our temple in Juhu, Mumbai, remains the most expensive real estate that ISKCON owns in the entire movement. This is the vision of Srila Prabhupada, who had incredible resilience to face whatever it took to share and spread Krishna consciousness and to establish his movement. But Srila Prabhupada wasn't just resilient. Srila Prabhupada was also very, very flexible. In 1953, I think it was, Srila Prabhupada was about to take Vanaprastha and he came to Jhansi, a little known city in India. And here, Srila Prabhupada began his preaching endeavors and he established something called the League of Devotees. And Jhansi was not a prominent city at all. It was not really a booming kind of place. But somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada found some sympathetic and some interested people there. In fact, in Jhansi, Srila Prabhupada initiated his first disciple. His name was Prabhakar Mishra. And Srila Prabhupada initiated him as Acharya Prabhakar. However, after Srila Prabhupada established the League of Devotees, established this whole thing, there was another conspiracy against him to take away the building that he had earmarked for the League of Devotees. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada realized Krishna has a different plan. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada just walked away from Jhansi. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said, if I wanted to stay in Jhansi and if I would have fought, no one could have defeated me. But I saw that Krishna had a different plan, and therefore I was flexible to go with Krishna's plan. It's very, very interesting. In Juhu, Prabhupada was completely resilient. He was almost stubborn, spiritually stubborn to stay there. But in Jhansi, when he had similar problems, he left. And he said, Krishna has a different plan. So Srila Prabhupada was resilient at times. And at other times, when he saw there was a need to be flexible, he was just flexible. Srila Prabhupada was just ready to move with Krishna's plan. In fact, the word Vraja, we know Vraja to mean Vrindavan. But Vraja also means, etymologically, to move. So it's explained that the residents of Vrindavan are so surrendered to Krishna that they're ready to move with the Lord's plan. They're ready to be flexible. They're ready to change their ideas, their plans, to accommodate Krishna's ever-changing ideas and plans. And so Srila Prabhupada was in that spirit of Vraja. He was just moving. It didn't work in Jhansi. He tried with his godbrothers. It didn't work with his godbrothers. Basically, in India, it wasn't working. So then he went to the US. He came to the US. He tried in Butler, but it didn't work. Butler, Pennsylvania. Therefore, he said, I have to go to New York. So he went to Dr. Mishra's apartment in upstate New York, but it didn't work there. So therefore, Prabhupada said, I've got to go down to the Lower East Side. So Prabhupada went to the Bowery. In the Bowery, some success, but it didn't work there. Prabhupada went to 26 Second Avenue, and then it worked. Prabhupada was just moving, flexible, to see what is Krishna's plan here. And when it worked in 26 Second Avenue, then he didn't just stop there. Then he went to San Francisco, and then many, many other places opened up after that. So it's amazing to see how Prabhupada had both sides to him, resilient and flexible both. Again, a wonderful teaching for each one of us. This is going to be my last one. As I told you, when I opened up this topic, we could actually go on and on and on and talk about so many other contrasting aspects of Prabhupada's personality. But for today, we'll end here. And then I'm going to be very, very happy to hear from all of you and what your realizations are on some of these points. Prabhupada was bold and strong here in France. Yogeshwara Prabhu tells this story very, very nicely of Srila Prabhupada's meeting with Cardinal Danielu. Obviously from the Christian tradition. And Srila Prabhupada was direct. Srila Prabhupada was going in with a message. And Srila Prabhupada met him, and you can watch this interview even today. And if you haven't watched it, then straight after this session, please do log on to YouTube and watch it. And Srila Prabhupada goes straight, and he begins asking about animal killing. He begins asking about cow slaughter. He begins asking, why is it that you say there are no souls in the animals? And Srila Prabhupada just doesn't compromise. He stays on the point and he keeps pressing and he keeps pushing. Srila Prabhupada could speak very, very strongly. He could speak very strongly. Mr. Sethi, who was one of Srila Prabhupada's supporters, a very successful industrialist in Mumbai, tells the story of how Prabhupada once came to him and asked him what his morning schedule was. And Mr. Sethi said, you know, sometimes I take breakfast in bed, I wake up, I do my work and other things. Prabhupada looked at him and said, what is the difference between you and a pig? Who would speak in such a way? Prabhupada was so bold, he was so strong, but it was coming from a loving space in his heart. And therefore, Mr. Sethi, when he heard those thunderbolt words from Prabhupada, it actually touched his heart. And he said, I could see he was not trying to impress me. He was not trying to flatter me. He was just telling me for my good. And Mr. Sethi went on to become one of Srila Prabhupada's greatest supporters. So Srila Prabhupada was really, the Shastra say, the Vaishnav. Vajradapi kathaurani mriduni kusumadapi lokataranam chaitamsi kaunu vigyatum ishvaraha. Says the Vaishnava, Vajradapi. The Vaishnava can be harder than a thunderbolt. And simultaneously, mriduni kusumadapi. At the same time, the Vaishnav can be softer than a rose. And Srila Prabhupada had both aspects to his personality. He was so bold and strong. He would speak out. He would confront. He would expose. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada was so human. He was so kind. He was such a generous person. And he was so personal. Here, this is one of my favorite pictures of Srila Prabhupada. This is Prabhupada 1965.